Hi, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jules. You've just been listening to me on the Women of Letters podcast. But sometimes, I hate to tell you, I do watch TV shows that aren't supernatural.
And I help. Tune in every week for the TV Chinwag podcast, where Jules and I get together and we talk about all scope of TV shows, from the good, the bad, to the absolutely fantastic.
So we go in depth on two TV shows every week, past, present, and future TV shows, so you know what to watch
and what to stay away from. We review things like, we've done The Leftovers, Black Sails, we've done Trailer Park Boys,
Penny Dreadful,
Fargo,
and many more things that we can't remember at the moment because we just watch too much television.
Our most popular is an interview with Mark Shepherd from Supernatural, so you should tune in and listen to that one.
And Doctor Who.
And Doctor
and Battlestar Galactica. And every other show that you've ever watched on television.
If you love the Women of Letters podcast, you're going to love the TV Chinwag podcast. Come on over and hope you enjoy it. See you then.
And Ryan's usually a lot more funny than this, but the pressure of doing a commercial advertisement has got to him.
This is the Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom.
Watch a horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Shocking me right out of my brain. Shocking me right out of my brain. Watch a horror movie.
Hi and welcome
right
to another Women of Letters podcast, and we're back with the show. So we're back with episode one of Supernatural. Hiatus is finally over.
Supernatural, just in case you thought you were listening to the Hannibal podcast.
Well, I had to be clear, Jules, because you do know that I do at least five other podcasts and I don't do any other podcasts.
Oh, yes. Well, that's true. I actually do another podcast.
You do. And over to you, Jules. I was getting to you over there.
Hello. Yes, I do another podcast called TV Chinwag, in which we review two different TV shows every week. So in the last few months, I've reviewed over 40 TV series.
So I was just reminding you, just in case you were kind of like fuzzy as to what we talk about.
But nothing ever surpasses Supernatural in my heart and my brain. So no chance of that, and no chance given it was the return, the first episode of season 10, Black. I even took the day off work so I could just sit and hug my computer to wait for a download, which I have to say appeared less than a minute after the broadcast was finished. In fact, possibly a minute before it was finished.
And they're pretty damn quick. And I took my computer and my trusty little dongle to work and acquired it while at work, so that when I got home, I didn't have to wait around for downloads. I could just watch it straight away. And I didn't go watch it in my car because I was unfortunately too busy, but you know, that has happened.
You did have some intermittent commentary from one Jay Ackles via Twitter.
I did, and there was no way that wasn't getting my attention. And I was like, oh my God, no, oh well, you know what, too bad. Jensen's tweeting, I'm going to get spoiled for the episode, but his tweets weren't spoilery. they were just strange and funny, but not even remotely spoilery. So,
no.
Yeah, it was awesome. His tweets were funny. And like we were saying, you actually read them in his voice because
yes,
they're so him.
It sounded just like him, particularly
like him.
The faux grumpy when people were having a go at him for hashtagging rather than doing at Misha Collins. And he's like, all right, get on. Smack him in the face.
I love that. I was like, oh, my God, he's getting his fake angry with us. I love it when he's fake angry.
So,
bless him.
Unfortunately, Jared was on a plane apparently, but hopefully we can
stuck on a plane, which has to be karmic and so. him and planes.
Hopefully, we can get the two of them tweeting together in the near future,
and more
of them, and Misha and Mark as well. Although, given the number of cons they've got,
yeah, they've got no time.
They've got no time. It's Toronto Con this weekend. And Mark's actually got two cons on. He's at somewhere in Boise, which is in Idaho, on Friday, and then he was at a tour con, Toronto Con, on the weekend. So it's like, how many damn conventions can you fit in a week?
Surprised
I've got time to make the show.
No, they are very busy. And like, Chicago's in like 2 weeks. They're basically every 2 weeks until Burbank's the end this year, and then it kicks off next year with San Francisco, and then they're just like practically few of them are back to back. Few of them, like San Francisco and Houston and Minneapolis and Vancouver, are a week, you know, each weekend. So, God, I don't know how they're going to get the energy.
It's all happening.
It's exciting.
And, actually, I should also mention on this should get published before then. New York Comic Con, Robbie Thompson is on the Spider-Verse panel, 4 p.m. Sunday.
That's exciting
because he's got a story in a new anthology of Spidey AUs coming out, in which he's written a steampunk lady spider, which I cannot wait to get.
I got such a visual for that straight away.
And the artwork for it is amazing. And then, of course, following week, as Amy and I have mentioned, we've got Elena Huffman and the Ghostfaces here, right here in Melbourne.
Woohoo!
So we will be having much fun with them this time next week.
That's so exciting. I'm so looking. Yes, this time next week. Oh, God.
We'll have just finished, I think. I think the last panel finishes at 3.
Oh, okay. And so we'll be freshening up before our dinner date. It'll be
freshening
so
up or just starting the drinking
yeah,
early.
Yeah, whoops.
Okay, probably. Let's dive into Black. When we last were with our intrepid heroes, Dean was dead.
I know, poor Dean.
But then he sort of came back, but he was a demon and he disappeared. And Sam didn't know where he went. Do you want to do this character by character or overall? How do we want to do this, Amy?
I don't know.
We should talk about beforehand.
We should have discussed this.
Okay, I'll start us off because unusually for me, I found a review of the episode I really liked, and it sort of encapsulated a lot of what I felt about it, and I just wanted to.
I saw you tweet that, but I didn't. I marked it away, but I didn't read it.
Yes, so it talks about it was on Vulture, and it's written by Price Peterson, and the title was Season 10 Premiere, 10th Times the Charm. And in part it said, in fact, it called it the least stressful, least apocalyptic series premiere in Supernatural's history. It was downright pleasant and comforting in a way that only a brand this trusted could get away with. It says this might seem like a dig, but it's not. And what the reviewer goes on to say, and I think it's very true, is if you think about it, there was no one focus of this episode. We really had three stories running, you know, in parallel throughout this. We had Dean and Crowley, we had Sam, and we had Cass's. And, of course, they intersected at times, but we really got time with each of those characters. And, you know, Jeremy Carver has said that this season it is personal, and this is really what this review says, is that, you know, this show is so sure of itself and its viewers and what it's doing that it could actually – rather than having a premiere that was full of, you know, sort of physical action and big moments, take the time to give the, Price is. It's one of those weird American names, isn't it, Amy?
I actually knew a Price once and he lived here.
So, yes, whatever gender Price is, says, it lets the characters speak for themselves, gives them room to breathe and hang out. And then says, I know we'll get back to Monsters of the Week, road tripping and complicated end times threats, but it was just nice to see the guys again. And that really struck a chord with me, because it certainly wasn't, say, compared to the last season's premiere where we had, you know, Sam you know, big stakes things like Sam choosing whether to die or not, and the angels after Dean, and that huge scene when the hospital's exploding, and you know, Cass nearly losing his life, and this was quieter in some ways, I think. How did you find it?
I absolutely like that. That's really interesting, that review, because I actually wrote a review this week, which I haven't done since. Pretty horrified to see that I hadn't done since Captives last season, when I actually went back and looked at when I stopped writing up season 9 because of life. So I actually wrote one this week. That was something that I said as well, that it felt incredible. I know that we've been told that the arc was going to be personal for all of these characters, but it felt very personal. It was quite a quiet episode in that way, and it allowed us to get back in touch with these characters, get to touch base with them, find out where they are without having to also take on board a whole lot of new that was setting up the mythology for the season. So we didn't have the big bad, except for the big bads that were within our characters that we were looking at. You know, we didn't have this kind of, oh, we can see where the mythology is going, or even really the, apart from the Mark of Cain, we didn't really bring anything much with us from the last season. It was really like these characters, here they are, what have they been doing for the last however many weeks? It was about six or something, I think it was. Where are they now with these changes? And it just allowed us to touch base with them again. And I found that, I wouldn't say I found it relaxing like our friend Price, but I found it really refreshing, and I found it, I always think that the show is at its best when it's doing this really tight character work, and that's what I thought about this episode. It was just such lovely character work with the writing, and the performances were just, you know, remarkable. And so I felt like it was really rewarding for that.
And I think
reason.
You know, the job of an opening episode of a season is to set up what's going to happen, at least in the first half of the season, if not some of the theme for the whole season, but particularly, you know, the first half of the season. And so I think, you know, we can see then, you know, when Jeremy Carver says, you know, this time it's personal, it's purposefully here giving us a chance to really get and stick in our minds where each of these characters are and what's going on for them and what the particular circumstances they're in means for them. So as you and I have talked about on many occasions, often when there's character stuff happening, important moments in a relationship or just for an individual, then, you know, the apocalypse happens or whatever.
Yeah.
Neither the character or often the audience gets time to reflect on that. And that works well because, you know, I think some of that, either the ambiguity or the lack of resolution, works very well with Supernatural's philosophy, if you like, of things not being black and white. But I think what we're being told here is, take a moment. We want you to really get to know what the Mark of Cain means for Dean. We want you to know what it's been like for Sam and what space he's in now. We want you to know, you know, where Cass is at. We really want you to see what they're struggling with and how that's changed them and not changed them, because going forward, that's going to be important. So, for example, I think just to start with Sam, you know, we start with this scene of him being, you know, full of rage and torturing this demon, and obviously alludes in his phone call to Cass that, you know, they've been out hunting demons. And what I like is the stuff that's really not said or spelt out is, obviously, you know, Sam's, other than the note that Dean left, which was a beautiful moment with that note of Sammy, let me go. And the fact that Sam's left everything like that.
And folded it on the pillow.
You know, all he knows is that Dean's dead, and all he can presume is that Dean's dead and the demon has possessed his body, yet he has still, you know, been on this mission to find Dean's meat suit, if you like.
Yeah.
But what I think it also shows, and we see it particularly first in the conversation on the phone with Cass, is whatever he's done, he's still Sam. This is not the Sam we saw at the end of Mystery Spot.
Not at all.
Who turned into some sort of revenge-fueled Uber version of John Winchester. Because we see very much in that phone call of with Cass, of Sam picking up on the fact that Cass is not in a good space and that he shouldn't burden Cass with, you know, what's going on and being, you know, considerate. And I think what that's saying is this is still the Sam Winchester you know, essentially. It's not Soulless Sam, it's not Mystery Spot Sam, but he has done bad things. And I think that's really interesting to me because we didn't just have this, we didn't have that Mystery Spot Sam.
No, and I really like that because we had, and I said exactly the same thing, we had like this, the focus Sam and the Sam who is solely focused on one thing, but we also had all the depths of who Sam is as well. So what we didn't see in Mystery Spot, but what we, you know, you could see in how it translated into him being this, as you say, Uber hunting Sam, but you never really saw his grief in a way that you saw it in Black, which was just, it was just palatable. He was so sad. Everything about him was sad. I mean, I think it helped a little bit that Jared's wearing his sling and, you know, he's looking a little bit less than pumped as he usually is, so he actually looks weaker in himself, you know, just physically, because as most of us know, you know, Jared had an accident, shall we call it, and broke his shoulder, which had to be written into the script, and so physically he even looked a bit weaker, but he just, there was such sadness in Sam, and you know, even when he was on the phone to Cass and Cass is like, I miss him, it's like Sam can't even say I miss him too. He's just too grief-stricken at the moment by not knowing what's happened to his brother and this search. And you see him sitting there, you know, just poring over notes and poring over his laptop, and you know that that's just all he's been doing. But he's not doing it with, like, this fury of energy. He's just doing it with this... It was just this overwhelming grief all around him. You could just see it. And that, and when he did walk into Dean's room and he flicked on the light and you realize he hasn't done anything in Dean's room, and Dean must have left the note folded on his pillow on the bed, and Sam's left it there, and he picks it up and reads it, folds it back up and puts it back down, and you're left with this sense of how often does he do that? How often does he go into that room, stand and in read, there and read that, that note, put it back, you know, sort of gently put it back on the pillow and just sort of look around the room, where are you and what's happened to him? Because you, as you say, at this point in time, he's assuming that some demon has somehow taken his brother's body as a meat suit, and he, it's not even so much at the beginning when we first see Sam that he's not out to save his brother, as like now he knows what's now he knows what's going on because Crowley kind of told him ish. It's not in the beginning, it's not about that, it's more like about finding Dean, almost to put him to rest, I think, more than anything else. So that scene was very powerful of him standing in his room, because there is that sense of when you lose someone and you don't want to touch the stuff, you know, you just want to leave it as it is, because it,
for when he comes back,
or it also just reminds you of, it's like a little snapshot in time of when they were there, you know, so you don't want to pack the shoes away or pack, because it, you know, last week they were there using that stuff, and you don't want to put it away. And I think, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who've gone through loss have done that, you know, leave everything alone, don't touch it. And, you know, there was such a sense of that with Sam, and Dean's bed was really neat. And I couldn't help but think, you know, Dean was pretty bloody when he laid him down, you know, did he, you know, but the room was spotless again. It's like he's got it all ready for him, just in case.
Now, one thing I thought was interesting is that we have a time, obviously there's been some time since Dean died, but between the opening scene of Sam torturing the demon and then us seeing him research is 4 weeks.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering if there's a hint that, you know, I'm just wondering why we skipped ahead, whether we will see more of, and we know that there's some implication of some very dark things Sam did, which we didn't see, other than torturing a demon, which we did see in this episode, which in the context of Supernatural is not particularly dark, but, you know, there there was a hint there, and there was the ambiguity of the demon speech, which, you know, first of all, you think she's being tortured by Dean because she's talking about someone having lost their soul and all that, and it turns around that Sam. But I just wondered, you know, what lengths, there's an implication there of what lengths he may have gone to in trying to make deals or do yes. something.
I think, yeah.
Dean back.
I think there's something happening in that 4 weeks that we're going to find out about later, which, you know, I mean, basically where we are with him now, he knows what's happened to Dean and he's pretty much on his trail, so he's going to catch up with him. So the bad stuff that we know Sam did to get Dean, to find Dean, is not something we're probably going to see now, because we know he's about to, you know, where he's about to find his brother and catch up with him. But so those 4 weeks, I think, are pivotal to some storytelling further down the road. I do as well. Someone pointed out to me that Sam wasn't actually torturing the demon with the demon knife. And I went back and had a look, and he wasn't torturing the demon with the demon knife, which I thought was really interesting as well, because why wasn't he doing that? But, yeah, I agree. I think that time jump is going to be something that we're going to be examining probably pre that time jump, and that 4 weeks specifically, yep. I think, will be something that we'll be examining in relation to what Sam did and, you know, the who is the true monster in this situation.
I did like the deft way they mentioned the fact that Sam has, you know, injured himself in a fight with a demon. I thought that was
and mysterious. I joked that did it happen in Omaha, because yeah. everything mysterious happens in Omaha. We never find out about. It must have been in Omaha, but yeah, I thought that was you know, got to slide that one in there, because you've got to kind of wonder what happens. And I did actually read an interview with Jeremy later after the show, who sort of said there is a reason and they may or may not reveal it. So it'll be interesting to see if they ever actually talk about, you know, what that demon did, that when Cass was there and it wasn't Sam's fault. I was like, what the hell happened? No, but yeah, well, they had to pop it in.
I'm looking forward to seeing lots of fic of Cass taking care of Sam after he broke his shoulder and going off to hospital to get his very fancy schmancy sling.
But
more than a sling. It must have some technical name, because it is
more than a sling.
It's some sort of body harness.
It's not
sling.
One of those things that you whack together with a bandage.
No, they couldn't cover it up by just putting like a you know, a cloth sling over it.
No, it wraps around his body and everything.
But it is sort of nice to see one of the Winchesters actually, you know, injured in the line of duty.
I think it actually made, you know, it, even though we know the reason behind it, it kind of just added to the power of Sam's weakness in that situation. Yeah. His you know, the fact that he really has no power in that situation in finding out what's wrong. He's doing the best he can, but he's really on his back foot in everything that's happening here. And he's gone
to such lengths that, you know, the indestructible Sam Winchester has been injured.
Yeah, I think it just added so much power to those scenes with Sam, and especially when we saw him later, you know, in actually in peril, you know, and you're like, oh my god, but he's only got one arm, and, you know, well, how's he gonna get out of
it? Makes it more believable then that someone like Cole
could,
you know,
can take
him down without the need of you know, elaborate booby traps and nets hanging from trees or something.
I thought you were gonna say a Labrador, then I was like, a Labrador?
Well, you could bring him down with a dog. Good. Maybe
it's happened to a Winchester before.
Yes,
a couple of times.
More my dog than your dog, but
my dog would just lick him to death.
Or he could trip over Buffy, maybe.
No, she would just cover him in spit, where she...
but I did love that. And of course, then we also get the introduction to the state that Cass is in during that phone call, which is, you know, the most vulnerable, even more vulnerable than Sam. And, you know, both suffering the grief and distress over what's happening to Dean, but also his vessel's terribly physically not well, and he's staying in the most cruddy of cruddy motels.
Yeah.
Well, I keep thinking, don't lie naked on that bedspread.
No, it's like, no, please. No, he had his
dressing
gown.
He had his robe on.
Thank God. Because I was like, oh, cover up as much as you can. But I thought it was so funny of all the things he learnt from the Winchesters, he learnt to stay in the most crap motels ever.
But I did like that part of the exchange where, you know, he sort of thinks that Sam is blaming him for his injury.
Yeah.
And he's like, it wasn't my fault. No, you just feel the weight of everything on Cass. And I think more of probably of all the – I mean, there was a big lot of story for each of them. But, you know, I just so felt for Cass, who's lost Dean. He's lost being an angel. He's – you know, he helped sort of get heaven back together, but he can't take part in that because of the situation he's in. And he just feels really – like, I think he's depressed.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I could think of. He's lost his purpose. He's lost everyone around him. He can't do anything. He can't fix himself. He's physically unwell. And he knows that he'll be, you know, a burden to Sam, because obviously that's why he brought it up with Sam, so he can't even sort of hang out there. So
Sam's got other worries. He doesn't need to be worried about.
Yeah, he felt to me like, you know, the dog that's gone to die under the back porch almost. Image I had of like just find somewhere scuzzy and on my own, and I'm just going to curl up here
and just write it out.
Yeah, and I thought that was just incredibly sad. And then, of course, Hannah comes along and offers him at least, you know, some purpose of something to do. And, of course, so it opens up then, you know, a whole other ethical and, you know, moral dilemma of and the practicalities of what do you do when, you know, you've still got some angels on earth. I think some people see it too black and white as sort of free will versus not free will. And I think it's more than that. It is about how to run heaven in a practical sense. It's like how to keep a society or a culture together. And Hannah's, I think, you know, obviously, and I think she knows she's not suited for it. Angels are either inherently and, you know, by nature or by nurture not set up to make these sorts of decisions, and so she's trying to do the best she can. I probably agree with her that having rogue angels, you know, hanging out on Earth's probably not hugely a great idea, but is having a couple of them, you know, camping and fishing really a problem?
I struggled a little bit, I have to be honest, with the inclusion of the angel storyline. I felt like in some ways it slowed down the action. I mean, you know, I'm not lying that I'm super connected to what's happening with the Winchesters, but I have so much feeling for Cass, and that moment, as you talked about in the motel room with him, I was like, oh my God, you know, I think especially out of last season where I felt Cass's storyline was, you know, really beautiful and resonated with me so much that I think I care more about Cass now than I ever have. I want him to be okay. And I, you know, this him going through all this again and, you know, losing his grace and the pain that he's feeling and also the longing and the missing of his friends and everything that you felt in that moment, he just broke my heart. But I felt like the angel storyline just kind of, it sort of slowed the action down a little bit. I wasn't crazy about it. I absolutely 100% got where Hannah was coming from. Like, for me, I was like, oh yeah, you know, she's seen the chaos in heaven. She's seen the anarchy. She's seen the angels dying. The only way that she can see forward is that all the angels toe the line. And that means all the angels full stop, because that's how heaven used to be when it was in order and before the, you know, archangels took over and started their own self-serving, you know, ways of running it. That's how heaven was. Everybody obeyed the rules, and when everybody did that, it was all okay. And so I completely got where she was coming from, but I was really surprised that when we met Fishing Angel and his buddy in
Adina,
sorry, Fishing Angel and Adina Fisher, Daniel, was it Daniel?
Daniel.
Yeah. Daniel and Adina. And Daniel was speaking so much about free will and, you know, what humanity means and why don't the angels, you know, learn more from humanity. And I thought what he was saying was, you know, all very relevant. And I was really surprised that Cass wasn't more forthcoming in He took a while to actually come around and sort of go, look, you know, shush, Hannah, he's actually got a point here. And I felt like, oh, God, he's actually saying so much that we've heard Castiel say before. And I know that Cass in that situation was really between a rock and a hard place because he's in such a weakened state and he wants to support Hannah. And, you know, he's come along to sort of I almost felt like he was coming along as a peacekeeper to make sure Hannah didn't like Angel Blade anybody. But I really wanted him. I kept thinking, oh, say something, because the angel that Daniel was actually saying so much that Cass believes now and knows and understands and has lived through and experienced, that I wanted to hear more from him in sort of almost reinforcing that, you know, there are other ways for the angels to live without having to be completely focused on you know, just all towing the line. And I guess that's coming, and this was just setting up this differencing of opinion. And also, you know, having Cass then in the car later relay to Hannah all of these things that she then turned around and said, but that's all the human stuff. And he was like, well, yeah, you know, that's obviously starting to bridge the gap in between where they both are, and maybe opening Hannah up to, you know, a more human story for her as an angel, and you know, changing her perceptions. But I love Cass, and you know, I'm really interested to see what happened. But for some reason, for me, that just kind of didn't. It just didn't feel as powerful as I wanted it to be, you know. And I make it sound like I didn't enjoy it, and I didn't in any way take any enjoyment out of the episode. But I did find myself going, oh, come on, let's go back to Sam or whatever, which might just be me. But, you know, I did actually feel myself kind of, you know, like it's almost like I was on this epic, oh, my God, this is like, and then I go, oh, and it was like you just sort of sit for a while, and then, oh, my God, and then just sit for a while. And I felt like it wasn't as punchy as I wanted it to be. And I know that's just my opinion. But
yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And I think as we're talking about at the beginning of the podcast about giving them space and really getting into where are they at, so that we see, yes, Cass has – both from being around humans and from being human himself, you know, learnt of the great things that can come from that chaos, as he said to Hannah in the car, mm. Art, hope, love, dreams, which was a lovely phrase.
Yeah, it was a lovely phrase. And also very Misha, I thought. It was almost like it was Cass, but I was also like, gosh, that's actually also the actor who's playing him. I thought it was like this really interesting little phrase that made me think of both people.
So I think we needed that time, but also to set up that conundrum, because as I said, I don't think it's a black and white thing. I think,
absolutely,
you know, not. Hannah has a point. And the thing is, angels aren't humans. So, you know, how far can they go in modeling, you know, how they exist on how we exist. And I think we needed for it not to become just throwing some phrases around about free will. I think it was good to get and to hear that from Daniel. We've heard it from Cass. We don't need to hear it from Cass again. To hear these other angels say, well, actually, unlike the rest of you, there are some of us who actually like the chaos and like this, and the contrast between talking about, you know, chaos but being in this very peaceful setting, mm. I thought was really good. And then, of course, you have it interrupted, you know, by the violence. And again, of course, the sad thing that, you know, Cass ends up killing the person who he actually really agrees with.
Yeah, and I thought that was really good, and I thought it showed that you're sort of in that position that, you know, There is no easy way and there is no easy answer.
Well, we talked in our previous episode when we were reviewing season 9 that there was a common phrase heard through that, and a common thread of I did what I had to do. And again, that sort of is that other thread of, you know, you can talk about having free will, but often that's constrained by circumstance or necessity or you choosing to do something even though you know it's wrong. And I think, you know, we see very much here that tension between all those things, because here's Cass killing someone he agrees with. Again, you can pose the phrase, who's the monster here? I mean, he's, you know, he's actually just killed someone who he totally agrees with. So yeah, what's up with that?
No, I thought
sits in the car and talks about, you know, the beauty that comes out of chaos, and you're like, hang on, man, you just killed someone who agreed with you about that.
Yeah.
And I think having that time for that to play out, you know, was important part of setting that up. Now, you know, you could have bumped that to the next episode or something, but I think this being the establishing episode for the season, and I mean inevitably we will get less of Cass's storyline as it goes on, but I think to give it a sound foundation at the very beginning was really important. So I think you know, we needed that at that time.
Yeah, I know all the reasons for it, and I can see what they were wanting to do with it, but just for whatever reason, and I mean, I've watched the episode, like, I don't know, about 6 times now, I think. I watched it 4 times that night, but for whatever reason, it just didn't hit the notes with me that I know it was that it hit with you. Everything was there. I knew what they were doing, what everybody was saying. I could see where Hannah was coming from. I understood Cass. I loved the conundrum of it. You know, I loved that Cass was actually the one who, in protection of Hannah, ended up killing the angel that really represents Cass in so many ways. But for me, it just slowed it up, and it might be just that I'm, you know, much more invested in the other story at this point in time, because I've been desperately waiting for it for 5 months to roll out. That actually, you know, changed how I saw it, because I'm
so
like,
let's get on to what you were waiting for, which was Demon Dean in the bad karaoke bar.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I think what was really surprising for me about Demon Dean was really how sad he was. I mean, and I don't mean, oh, I'm so sad that he's not Dean, you know, like, absolutely not like that, but he's just as sad as Dean is, as far as I can see. You know, like, for me, his fun was, you know, he didn't really look like he was having fun to me, even though on the outside he looked like he was having fun, but he was, you know, just getting hammered and but it was awesome, don't get me wrong. I was like, if I can just step back from the fact that I'm like, oh, dude, I think, you know, you're still really glum. I was like, oh, this karaokeing thing is so much fun, seeing him play foosball. What I thought was really sad, though, was, like, when I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, the only way he can get away from the burden of his life and actually find a place where he's not caring and not have responsibility is to pretty much lose his humanity, which I thought was tragic. But, yeah, I mean, those scenes, all the Demon Dean stuff was equal parts huge amounts of fun, but also equal parts really rather sad, I thought. And then, you know, I was like, there was moments where, and what I really liked about it is that there was like this, you couldn't really, it was hard to tell where the original Dean stopped and Demon Dean started. There's this really weird, blurred, fuzzy line, you know, because a lot of what we were seeing him do was Deanish behavior, but amped up to an 11. But there was still this sadness within him.
I think there's a very purposeful, you know, parallel with what we were just talking about with Sam too. So we get to see that this is a demonic version of Dean, but yes, there is still a lot of Dean there, but with some, as you say, with something, some of the essential Deanness taking out. I have to say, I was surprised that he and Crowley go and howl at the moon and they end up in a dive bar doing karaoke.
I mean,
hello, please, Dean, call me for some advice on how to go and howl at the moon, mate.
I think that I'm hoping that they were somewhere better before that.
I think I could have done a little bit better with the schedule of moon howling activities.
I know, it was a pretty crappy place. That they were, everything about it was crappy. I laughed that they'd got themselves a hotel room, and I started going, well, do they have to sleep? You know, like, demons don't sleep. Or maybe Dean, because he's not 100% demon.
I assume they just got the hotel room to have sex.
Sex with women.
And a bit of alone time.
A bit of alone time. And to sort of appear human, I guess. I also thought they probably wanted to actually make it look like they were semi-human. But yeah, it was.
How did they go to Vegas?
I mean, it was an interesting place that they ended up, which I also thought was really sad and kind of really Dean Winchester, that no matter what, he ends up in dives, you know, with crummy motel rooms.
I suppose it would be easier if they're going to kill people to do it somewhere like that, possibly rather than Vegas, although 15 years of CSI might belie that.
No. How many people was it? Vegas must be one of the murder capitals, I reckon.
Well, if you watch get away CSI, with it. Yes.
Yeah, no, everybody's dying all the time, but maybe they don't want to go there because they've got CSI. But, yeah, no, Dean was – there was a lot of fun going on with Dean, but also a lot of not-so-fun stuff. I mean, I just – It was sitting there and just thinking, is he actually feeling something here, or is he not feeling something? I found it delicious. I thought he was absolutely. I thought it was delicious. I loved the way Jensen played it because you were just never really sure, you know, what was going on with him, and then he'd let out with like that corker line that he let out to Anne Marie, and you're like, ooh, shite, that's, you know, so cruel and harsh. But then when she walked out of the room, he kind of looked a bit like miserable, you know, like,
well, she,
you know,
had chosen not to go with him.
I know, like... it almost smacked of old self-loathing when he sort of said that. Then, you know, he retaliated to her, which we've seen Dean actually retaliate with pretty nasty comebacks before. He retaliated to her, and then it was like he was kind of almost disgusted in himself. I don't know. I thought he was really interesting because he's not just this devil-may-care demon. He's still... Dean somehow colouring it all, and I thought it was beautiful.
Although I think I'll go back to what I was going to say first. I think it was interesting that probably the most un-Dean things that he was doing were having fun.
Yes.
Like, take out the nastiness and the not caring and all that. We so rarely have seen Dean let loose and have fun like that. It was interesting that that side of him felt as foreign as the hateful, hurtful side. And I just thought, you know, that's sad too.
Yeah, it is.
You know, happy-go-lucky, have too many drinks, have sex and, no, you know, you don't have a bloody Amazon spawn or get kidnapped after it. and all that, was that was actually as foreign as the bad side. I mean, I don't, and it will be interesting to see how that the final scene plays out, because it certainly suggested in that moment that he didn't care whether Sam lived or died.
No, it certainly suggested in that moment that he didn't care whether that happened. But yeah, even with that fun stuff, and yeah, that's, you know, like you say, it's like, was really foreign and really sad to see that, oh, for Dean to have some fun, he's got to actually
become a demon.
Yeah, lose who he is. You know, he has to no longer be Dean in order to see him have some fun. But, you know, it was post when Moose called, he didn't like split when he found out that Sam's on his tail. He just kept drinking and doing bad karaoke. But that kind of, it's kind of at the beginning, he looked like he was having so much fun, you know, drinking and doing karaoke. But that back end of it, just getting completely annihilating himself on the booze and, you know, pushing around people on karaoke and, you know, the nastiness to Anne-Marie, it kind of lost that fun. And it was almost like something else was happening there, and that sort of carefreeness, it's almost like the fun is hollow. I think it's, I don't really believe it's fun.
Crowley had bought up, you know, also bought up like the potential of, you know, hell related responsibilities, which is a bit of a, it's a bit like stop your vacation and get back to work sort of thing.
Not that Dean was in any way having anything to do with any of that.
No, exactly. But, you know, it was sort of, I suppose, taking you, like anyone who's on holidays, taking you out of the moment and going, well, is this what I'm going to do forever? Like, can I just keep doing this? And what does this look like? Being, you know, I got the sense that he hadn't actually sat down and thought, what does being a demon look like for me? He needs some career coaching. So I think there was part of that sort of, and the message, you know, finding out that Sam's on his way, it's a bit like reality intruding on your holiday again when you accidentally check your work emails.
That's what it was like. It was like the reality of everything kind of just sort of came back to him, and he went from woo to sort of like, I'm just going to drown it all out. And And yeah, I found Dim and Dean just this wonderful mix of gleefulness that I was feeling watching him do this, and sadness that I thought he doesn't, you know, oh, maybe he's not as having as much good time as I think he is, or he thinks he is. And it made me think that, you know, there's probably a bit of Dean lingering in there for him, which is colouring some of his ability to just let go.
Well, we certainly got that, the implication from Crowley that there was a bit of a continuum there, that, you know, there was an influence of the mark that could be greater than it currently was. So, yeah, you certainly got the idea that things could be a lot darker for him.
I question everything Crowley says, though, you know, and I question, like, the fact that he's throwing the Abaddon fanboys at Dean for Dean to kill him, and he says it's because you've got to feed the mark. And this is what he's been telling Dean from when Dean started vomiting in the, you know, when he was locked up in the dungeon and he was vomiting, and Crowley's like, because you've got to feed the mark, you've got to feed the mark. And he's saying this again, you've got to feed the mark, so I've been throwing these people in front of you to keep you sharp and to feed the mark. And I'm kind of like, I've you know, we've all been burnt by Crowley before. Is that really why he's doing it? Or is it, I keep going back to Cain, who had the mark forever and had the first blade, managed to put the first blade down and live with the mark and fall in love and have a life and a marriage, and, you know, that would have gone on, you know, so...
But I think the key there is separating Dean from the blade, which we've already seen is something he doesn't want to do. So
no.
If you want to... I don't doubt that maybe that could break it. But I think, I certainly think the mark has to have an effect.
Oh, yeah, I think it absolutely has an effect. But I can't help but look at Crowley and go, is he actually feeding demons to Dean to stop him going full-blown demon, or to keep a demon like this?
Yes.
You know, there's like, he's saying to Dean, it's to stop you going full-blown demon. You know, maybe he's either trying to stop Dean going full-blown demon because he knows he's going to be way too powerful for Crowley to control, as opposed to, oh, I'm being nice and being a buddy. Or maybe if he doesn't feed the mark, you know, that maybe something else happens. Maybe he's saying, you know what I mean? So, you know, what Crowley, I can't wait to actually see that all play out. I was like, I can't wait to Dean, I love Crowley, you just adore him. And I cannot wait to see him land on his ass.
I have to say, I had images that there must be, you know, fights in the writer's room over who gets to write for Crowley.
Oh, he's so
damn unreal. Damn, he had some kicking line.
He's so good. He's so good.
Oh, my God.
I just love him. And then he's saying to Dean all the stuff about, you know, this is a favor, and this is a favor. I got you the mark as a favor, and then, you know, now I'm doing this to you as a favor. I'm giving you everything. And I thought, oh, man, you are – and Dean's face. And I was like, well, I'm kind of almost – feel like he's forgetting who he's talking to, and I think he's going to get in trouble.
We'll have to wait and see.
I was like, oh, shush, because, like, Dean's got really uber angry face on. Or actually, he had flat dead Dean face on, which was even scarier.
I just want to find the Flickr album with the images of the orgy they had with the triplets, because that would be awesome.
Hazel and I were saying that on the season 10 DVD they should do something like they did at the end of The Hangover.
Oh, yes.
And just have a whole lot of photos compiled of Dean and Cass on their wild adventure.
Crowley, sorry.
Whoops. On their wild adventure. I nearly said Sam at first, so I couldn't even get any of them out.
I can't remember. I'm sorry who it was on Twitter, but we were trying to come up with, you know, what the name was other than orgy for a fivesome, and someone came up with the term devil's trap, which I
that's pretty good.
Because, of course, a devil's threesome is the term often given to two guys and a girl. So two guys and triplets, a devil's trap,
I think works very well. That's really good.
I will be adopting that next time I have sex with two demons.
Oh, there you go.
So also, we should mention, of course, we had the introduction of coal.
Yeah, yeah, that was really interesting. What an odd fellow he was with his family having breakfast and he's pumping iron in the other room.
Some people said the weirdest thing being he actually owned a fax machine.
Which I saw so many people talking about, and I had to go, well, actually, you know, I know people who own fax machines, and two other people tweeted me going, yes, me too. And one of my friends owned ones and says it's still super busy all the time. So.
Well, I can also say in the healthcare industry, there are many, many medical practitioners who still use fax machines.
There you go.
My organisation is, which it struggles because there are things that we can't do entirely electronically because, you know, ooh, email, scary.
Yeah.
No fax me. People. So maybe not that rare, but certainly a lot rarer than
A lot rarer.
And there'd be very few people who had a fax machine at home if you didn't have a business.
Yeah, yeah. My parents had a fax machine at home. They loved their fax machine.
And someone said, why doesn't anyone ever fax pictures of Dean to me?
Yeah, I know, right? Why does that never happen? Oh, my God. And who faxed him?
Mm, exactly.
Bum, ba-dum, bump. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Cole was, you know, mysterious. I think that the setup of him was nice and mysterious. That we can see he's obviously a military guy. He's obviously highly skilled. What the hell was that gun that he had?
Packed? Oh, I know. I said he must be severely compensating for something with all that smart weaponry. A little bit of trivia here: that the photos of Cole as a Marine were actually photos of Travis Aaron Wade, the actor, because he used to be a Marine.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, they were on the wall. I saw them and I was like, that's cool.
No Photoshop there. The actor actually was a Marine. So.
Yeah, well, he did Marine well. I think he looked really scary.
I imagine whatever his story is of why he wants to kill Dean will be just another version of, you know, who is the monster.
Mm-hmm. Dean's obviously responsible for someone in his lifetime. Do we know who? I can't remember. No. So, and that will also reflect on who, you know, if Dean was, you know, what was Dean at that point in time as well.
Well, yes. I mean, and I think transformations, demonic transformations aside, these, you know, Sam and Dean are at a point where many of the things they have done would be viewed by many people as monstrous, you know. Context aside, there would be people saying, you know, you've done things that are heinous and unforgivable.
They think that as well about themselves.
Yes, which has often come up. So I certainly think we're in for a lot of soul searching, so to speak.
Which I'm so looking forward to. And, I mean, I think that's what this episode just did beautifully. And I thought it was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. I was like, wow, that was a really punchy episode. It left me I just don't often, like, as much as, you know, like, I'm always watch the episodes a couple of times on the first night, I don't often just stop it and start it straight again, which is what I did with this one. I went, whoop, I've got to watch that again straight away. I was just thought it was amazing, you know. All our character stories were just so I just felt for each one of them. Maybe not Crowley, but I will feel for him later when he might get punched in the face. But I was feeling so much for all of them, you know, that I wanted to go back and see more of what they were doing and get a better sense of it, because I was so excited when I watched it the first time. And it did feel just such a personal experience with each one of them of you know, a little bit of understanding of what they're all going through and how they're all going through very similar things in many ways, which I thought was super cool.
Yes, yeah. So we're left with Dean assumedly having rejected Crowley's offer, and he's in the car on his own. We're not sure whether his abandonment of Sam at a time of extreme need is real or not. I'm assuming it is.
I think it's real, yeah. I felt like it was real. I mean, I did feel there was stuff in that, like that. I thought that end conversation was like the most chilling realization of what Dean has become. It's like you could kind of, because he was having so much fun and the sex and, you know, the karaoke and the drinking. I mean, even though you could see that there was sadness, you know, like, no, I'm not saying he was sad, but there was like sadness from our point of view of you know, that he doesn't actually look like he's having the best time ever in this horrible dive. But you could kind of get washed away by all that kind of stuff. Whereas when, and you could kind of go, oh, you know, he's not so awful. But then when we had him in the car, he was just like so cold. But yeah. then, you know, there was, but then he picked up the phone, you know, and he asked if Sam was dead. You know, the first thing he said is he dead? You know, and, you know, there was an aspect of, you know, I'm 100% sure I'm going to come and kill you. And there was an aspect of still this sort of thing in Demon Dean where you were, like, left wondering, which I thought was really great. Like you say, we're assuming that he's leaving Sam and going, you know, it's not my problem anymore.
Yeah.
Which I think it was more that, more than, you know, oh, it's okay, I don't care if he's gonna, you know, he's dead or whatever. It was more like, it's just not my problem anymore. You know, that is no longer my care or my problem. I've moved on. But there was still that kind of, that questioning that, well, why did he ask if he was dead? Why is he coming after Cole? You know, we know that Dean knows that Sam can take care of himself, you know, so maybe there's that he can take care of himself. So you're still left with this sort of questioning about Demon Dean, and
well, I think it's,
which I thought was really great.
You know, and we don't want to believe that he would just leave Sam to die.
Which
I think that's my struggle, is grasping at straws, because I don't want to believe he would just go, you know, whatever, I'll come and kill your ass because, you know, you're fucking me up, but, you know,
yeah.
Sam can look after himself. That's really hard to take.
It is really hard to take. And I think, you know, and I agree, I think you kind of, the audience is like desperately trying to find Dean in there because we don't want that man to be totally gone. But you're left with that vision of Dean just staring out the window like empty. And, you know, like soulless, essentially, and you're sort of left with this feeling of like, oh my God, yeah. You know, it was, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. And that was the most, it was such a great end to the episode. It was, you know, I think it left everybody gobsmacked that this could ever happen between these brothers in this way. But, you know, it was, I'm really love the whole Sam and Dean thing, because like we talked about before we actually saw the episode, that we're getting Sam put into the situation essentially in many ways that Dean's been in a couple of times, where he's going to go all out no matter what, no matter what his brother says, he's going to save his brother and he's going to do whatever he takes, you know. Dean has said, let me go. Dean has said, it's better this way. And Sam's like, and now he even knows now what's happening with Dean, and he's still like, you know, I'm going to go and find him even more so probably.
Oh, yes.
You know, now it's like really impassioned. It's actually Dean is really impassioned. So Sam is, I always thought he would do this anyway, you know, like I know we've had that conversation as well. I never thought for a minute that he would let Dean die if he was put in that situation. But, you know, he has really been put in that situation, and he's walking in the shoes that Dean has had to walk in. And certainly at the beginning of season 9, for all the stuff that Sam was angry about at Dean, Sam's now sort of turned around and had to, and is really doing a very similar thing. He's not shoving an angel into his brother, but at this point in time, I question that he wouldn't if he had the opportunity. You know, he's so far gone now that he probably would if he could. But I love that. I love that he's learning that. And then from the other side, Dean is actually, when he comes out, he won't be looking at it now, but he'll actually have more understanding about what Sam has gone through when he's had everything taken away from him in his choice of becoming something else. I'm not saying in his choice of Sam saving him or whatever. I don't know how Dean's going to feel about that when he comes out the other side. But Sam has lost his soul. Sam has been possessed by demons. Sam has been possessed by an angel, you know, and none of that has ever happened to Dean. Now, Dean is a demon, not by choice. He had something happen to him that someone else caused and made this decision that ended up with him like this. So he's actually experiencing something that Sam has experienced in the past.
You could argue Dean did have, you know, he took on the
mark
of Cain.
Well, he did take on the mark of Cain.
And he said bugger the consequences, so...
I know, but he didn't know this was going to be the consequences.
No, he
didn't. And what has happened to him is not...
He did have a choice, and he could have said, hang on, just tell me what are those consequences. So I know he wasn't in the state to ask at the time, but I think it's a slightly...
But you know, I think well, I think where he's ended up is very much where Sam has ended up in the past.
Oh, sure. The end point is the
yeah,
same.
Yeah, the end point is the same. And so he's going to understand what it's like to be something that you didn't – he didn't want to be a demon, you know, and maybe he would have made that choice anyway regardless because of where he was emotionally. But he wasn't going, oh, screw it, I'm going to become a demon. You know, so that's something
yeah,
we know,
Dean. I'm assuming here that if at some point he's not demonic – he's going to regret.
Well, that's what I said. I said I don't know what Dean's going to be in the long run, but I think he's seeing from the other side of the fence what it is to be something else when you didn't know that that was going to happen
sure.
or didn't have that control over it.
But I probably think on balance he's enjoying it at the moment.
I think he's enjoying it in a hollow way.
We'll wait and see.
Yeah, I think he's enjoying not having any care. And there's part of me that's like really sad that I go, I'm kind of glad he's having a break from all the crap, you know. I'm kind of glad he's having, you know, like not having to sweat on every single thing and feeling all this guilt and oh my God, you know, it's like, you know, dude, have a good time. But some of the fun just to me just felt really hollow. And it was probably post finding out that Sam was on his tail that was more like, oh God, you know, I'm going to have to move on. And it was probably more along those lines. But I wonder if he's having as much fun as it looks like on the outside. Because he still seems sort of miserable to me, but yeah, it was fun to watch. And I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how he feels when he comes out the other side, if he's happy about it or if he wishes he was still there's going to have to be part of him that wishes he was still the guy who didn't care about anything, because it's so much easier to care, like Soulless Sam was.
I think one of the interesting comparisons, of course, will be assuming, you know, we're going to find out that Sam's done some terrible things, whether Dean will be, I mean, and Dean obviously as demon will have as well, has done already, but will it be, well, yes, but I was a demon, I couldn't help myself, but you were human, you were Sam, and you chose to do these things. And I think there's, again, it ties into the whole free will thing about, and the I did what I had to do, and at what point does that stop being, you know, I did what I had to do to try and find you or save you. So I can see, you know, a lot of potential for more conflict in the future.
Yeah, I think that'll be really interesting to see how Dean does feel about things that he did as a demon, if he's like, well, I was a demon, or if he's going to carry guilt for that as well. But I think a lot of what we're going to be seeing is going to be around what Sam did and coming to terms with that, which I think is really interesting. Yeah, they've certainly set up such a fascinating premise for all the characters to go forward. I think probably the only one we didn't get a real sense of was Crowley so much at this point of time. But you kind of just got the idea that, wait a minute, he's, you know, I just never trust him. He's got something in the works. He's got something in the works that we don't know about. And I kind of kept thinking, oh, what's he doing? Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. Even just the whole, hey, let's. I was like, Crowley, God, you know, like he really has fallen for Squirrel big time.
Oh, yes.
He really has. I was like, oh my God, he's a bit of a chump. I never thought I'd say that about Crowley. He just likes Squirrel a little bit too much.
Who wouldn't fall for Dean? I mean, come on.
Oh, come on, I know, right? And Crowley does just want to be loved after all.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So, episode 2 next week. It looks like it's going to be all happening in these first few episodes. So
it looks like Demon Dean has a fog machine.
Yes.
I love that he travels with his own fog machine.
We'll have to wait and see, and how Sam escapes from Cole. And
yes, I can't wait to see that. No, I have so much faith in Sam that I think he can do anything, even one armed.
Quite possibly. And what happens? Oh, I have to mention, I thought Hannah, I really like her relationship with Cass, and the, you know, if he has to be apart from the Winchesters, then I think having, you know, someone else there that we get to see more of Cass's character come out. And I love that, that scene of her and Cass, both when they stop because Hannah's got car sick, which is hilarious. But the final scene too in the car, I thought that final scene was wonderful.
Great. Yeah, that final scene was great. And it was like she's – I like that you sit there and go, you can see what learning – path she's going on, and you know, I think that'll make their relationship very interesting as they move forward, trying to, you know, figure out a way that they can both deal with what they're going to have to do in heaven, but also I think she's going to become very much about saving Cass as well.
And the other person we have to mention who was an instant fan favorite was a Mickey the Gas and Sip clerk.
He was amazing.
Describing porn guy and
I like, did I take a field, what was it? Did I do a field interview? No. I was just like, oh my God, I want to high five him.
Yeah, having a brown moment in my favorite pants.
He had beautiful dialogue. That was so nice, the scripting that he had to work with.
And the whole say my name.
And the kid just owned it. I was like, oh, this dude's awesome. I reckon that was one of those times where they cast him and in just a little small role and then kicked themselves that they didn't hang on to him for something bigger, because he was so amazing. And he just, I just loved that character. That was great.
Yeah, no,
he was great.
You never know. They go to a lot of Gas and Sips. Maybe he'll get transferred to another one.
That would be hilarious if they just keep running
into
him. He could
just turn up at randomly.
Random Gas and Sips. Haven't we met before? Weren't you the porn dude? And the fact that Dean went into a Gas and Sip to read porn was just funny as well.
Actually, there was a tweet from someone, and I've forgotten who it was now, that it was Bob Singer who directed the episode. It was actually, it might have been Jensen who said that it was his direction that after he kills the demon that he would go back and pick up the porn.
Yeah, which is fantastic. That was really great. That was really great. I was so like, oh, my God, he goes and gets
tune in. We will probably we'll try and podcast live if we're not too hungover or hungry or something. Yes. Next weekend.
We should definitely try to do that.
In amongst our Armageddon
social engagements.
Convention. Fun and games. So thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy season 10. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is WOLSPN@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.